Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast. This is a podcast where we delve into the darker side of our existences. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss murders, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, the paranormal, and the dark depravity of the human soul. I am David, and with me as always is Forrest, Rachel, and John. How are we all tonight?
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Doing well.
Good job, guys.
Beautiful.
Woohoo! All right, we're episode 8, everybody.
Heck yeah.
This is good.
I'm psyched.
Recently, we've had a huge increase of likes on our Facebook page.
Major.
A lot of people are starting to really like this podcast.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, we're going to give a shout out to everyone for liking it. Please download our episodes and listen to them.
Please
do. Greatly appreciated.
And rate them. Rating them is huge.
Oh, yeah, rate them. We have 5 ratings right now. We need more, guys.
Facebook, Instagram.
Rate and review.
Rate and review, please. Even iTunes.
All right, guys. Well, on our show today, we have our first Diving Deeper into the Darker Side Part 2, with a continuation of the Rendlesham Forest story. Later, Rachel and John are going to dive into the madness that is this story and take you all along with them. I'm looking forward to it, guys. I really am.
I am, too.
Part 2.
It's going to be fun.
Heck yeah.
All right, guys, at this time, I'm going to introduce a new segment. It's a segment where I give a few fun historical facts related to the darker side of humanity. The segment is called Today in History, Darker Side Edition. We are recording this episode on April 22nd, so I pulled the information from today's date, April 22nd, in history. So I'm going to give you our first one today, guys. In 1519, Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes established a settlement in Veracruz, Mexico. We all know what happened down there when Cortes started, basically destroying all the natives in South America and in the Mexico area.
I thought he just
invented... pulled a Chris Columbus.
Yeah, just as bad, wouldn't it, John?
I thought he invented the margarita. I didn't realize there was all this negativity.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, nothing bad happened when Cortez landed in the southern area of the world. In 1915, the use of poison gas in World War I escalates when chlorine gas is released as a chemical weapon on the Second Battle of Ypres, I think it might be. I think that was the old Krauts' fault. I think they're the ones who basically chlorine gassed the entire front there.
That sounds good, like Lord. Fun.
No, it wasn't fun. It wasn't much fun at all for any of those people involved during that time.
My bad.
Good Lord. All right. In 1945, World War II, Führer Bunker. After learning that Soviet forces had taken Eberswalde without a fight, Adolf Hitler admits defeat in his underground bunker and states that suicide is his only recourse, if you believe that he actually took his own life.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, isn't tomorrow his birthday?
420 was his birthday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which was Friday. Yeah. He was born on the 420s. No. So, so basically technically two days after his birthday, he supposedly committed suicide. There's facts in history that will tell you either way.
Yeah.
Happy Hitler suicide day.
Think about what you're really celebrating, you dopers.
Yeah, it's basically in 1519, Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortez basically opened up the world for the rest of, everybody else to go down there and just peddle off to South America like the Nazis did after World War II.
Wow.
They established quite a bit of themselves down there. In 1997, Houak Kamesti massacre happened in Algeria where 93 villagers were killed for absolutely no reason. I think one of the warlording generals in the area of that was going on a rampage and basically going from village to village and killing women, children, and men for absolutely no reason. It could have been religiously backed, I think. I'm not sure 100%. But I do know that that was one of the things that did happen today in history. To top it off, our last one here in the darker side history on the day. In the year 2000, in a pre-dawn raid, federal agents seized 6-year-old Elian Gonzalez from his relative's home in Miami. And we all remember that. We all remember that happening. Poor guy. And I know he was sent back to Cuba, was he not?
Yes. I believe he was sent back to Cuba.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I'm not really sure what happened to Elian. I'm not, maybe we can do a little update on him at some point, but that's about it. All right, guys. Well, let's jump into our news stories. Today, I have a news story. I did get it again from coasttocoast.com. They're a wealth of knowledge in regards to that.
Coast to coast, like taters and toast.
All right.
So, Massachusetts town orders UFO monument moved. A rather sizable monument that commemorates a historical UFO event is giving a small Massachusetts town quite the headache. The massive concrete marker, which stands 6 feet tall and weighs 5,000 pounds, honors the 1969 incident in the town of Sheffield in which over 40 people reported seeing the UFO. After this, I'm going to give you guys a little breakdown as to what happened in this UFO event so that you guys know why there is a commemoration. Okay. Although it was backed by some members of the community as well as witnesses to the event, it would seem that not everyone is thrilled with the unorthodox addition to the town. Following its initial installation in 2015 near a replica of a historic covered bridge, town officials quickly realized that it had been placed on public land and therefore had to be moved. Some chagrined residents suspect that this oddly timed discovery was made because of a faction of townspeople found in the monument to be eyesore next to the picturesque bridge. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, the group behind the monument acquired the town's wishes and moved the piece 30 feet away to what was believed at that time to be private land. And then they basically followed up. Somebody said, well, no, that wasn't private land. That still is technically town public land. Yeah. And now they want to move it again, but they're trying to halt it and state, no, that we don't want to move this thing again. We were told that this was private land. Hmm. We're going to keep it there, and they're trying to fight it. That's where they are at this point with that story.
Now, where is Sheffield, Mass?
Sheffield is right...
is it in the Bridgewater Triangle area?
No, this is actually out in Great Barrington.
Oh,
this
okay.
is in the West Coast. So
awesome.
We've actually probably been through the town when we go out there in the Berkshires every summer and, you know, our time that we spend out there. So here's what happened in 1969. In 1969, a young Thomas Reed and his brother had a UFO abduction experience at their family home in Sheffield, Mass. Basically, what happened to these two gentlemen is that they were very young. They were like 8 and 9. They saw a bright light, and then all of a sudden they're in this giant metal room. Like, not at their home, not anywhere else. Hmm. Hours later, their mother finds them after looking for them hours in their front yard. Both of the boys are in shock. They don't know what's going on. Fast forward a week later or so, the entire family gets abducted. The entire family, father, mother, grandmother, boys, all of them end up in this giant warehouse room after seeing a bright light, and they're driving down the road in their car.
Interesting.
During this time also 30 or so other residents noticed bright lights and ships in the general direction of their Sheffield home.
Interesting.
So those guys can corroborate, the witnesses can corroborate the fact
story,
that yeah. So that's why this town recognize that event. But here's also a cool thing.
It sounds like it could be the impetus for Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, and it definitely was a third kind experience.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
So what the Great Barrington Historical Society and the state of Massachusetts have both recognized this event as true and part of the state's official history and thus America's history, and is the first and only event of its kind to be introduced into the United States history as an official event.
And did you say state?
Yep, and state, Massachusetts. Because it's because it's recognized as the Massachusetts state history, it is technically now part of the United States history.
That's awesome.
Yep. Massachusetts invented America, so that makes sense.
Yeah, it sure did.
Everything's in Boston.
All right, guys, Forrest, that's my new story. Forrest, you have a new story for us today?
Oh, heck yes. So this is a follow-up story, pretty much, from what
the poop in one?
Yes.
For poop train.
The poop train.
Choo-choo.
Ride on the poop train.
Poop train carrying human waste cleared after months squatting in Alabama town.
Squatting. I like that.
Yeah, and I got this from, was it NBC News? I think it's NBC News by Eric Ortiz.
Yep.
Alabama's poop train is no longer raising a stink.
Oh, God.
The mayor of the tiny town of Parrish, the train cars carrying human waste from New York City were finally emptied and cleared and should be removed soon. So they were emptied and cleared.
So they just took the poop out and left the stinky trains there? Because those still have to stink, I would imagine.
So they removed the poop from the trains? And they haven't, where did they put it? In other train boxes? And or did they move the whole boxes? Yeah.
And I know they used the shark steamer on them to make sure that they were nice and clean.
And also correction, too, with it wasn't just New York City. I think it was also like Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, there were a couple cities that were sending their poop over to this place. Yeah, I think it was New York, New Jersey, New York City, etc. Yep. Yeah, the bigger ones in that metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm. And someone wrote, the mayor, Hall, says, I know this situation took longer than anyone, especially myself, had hoped it would take to come to an end.
Come to the
an end.
Like as in your poop shoot.
The rear
like
end.
But who'd they hire to take care of that?
I don't know. The shit comptroller? I'm not really sure who you would put in charge of that. It's definitely not the town. What do they call that? What do they call the place where all your poop goes in the town?
The poopatorium.
The poopatorium.
I don't know. So going...
Yeah, the poop dump.
The waste management facility, the wastewater.
Yeah, wastewater management.
Oh, my water God. Treatment facility.
The water treatment plant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like the one in one of our towns near us in Southbridge where you can smell the entire thing all throughout everywhere.
Every drive right by it.
Oh yeah.
Parked right next to a McDonald's and a grocery store, yeah. So in case you're hungry.
Yeah. Yep.
Get your burger and fries and shit wafting up your nose. It's awesome.
So going forward, the town of 982 residents northwest of Birmingham gained notoriety and became the butt of several jokes.
The butt. The puns just keep getting better and better.
Whoever wrote this is an ass.
Whoever wrote this was an ass.
I did say his name, but I don't want to repeat it. He must have been cracking up. After complaining that the smell from the train was making the outdoors unbearable... Can't come out here and barbecue like I used to, Parrish resident Robert Nash told NBC affiliate this week. I know the flies were getting in my house.
Ew.
Oh, God. Seriously, it got a little warm down there during the last few weeks. Good Lord.
Before the train cars were emptied, about 10 million pounds of human waste were on the train that came from waste management facilities in New York and New Jersey. The train was supposed to go... through Jefferson County, but the town of West Jefferson obtained an injunction arguing in court earlier this year that the loading and unloading of containers violated its zoning laws.
Why would you want that stuff to go through your town? Why would you want that to be part of your town?
And that's, you know, that's basically it. If you guys, you know, want to read more about it or know more information about it, just go on our Facebook page and just, you know, read about it. We'll be posting
exactly.
it.
Oh, you could call that a shitstorm, huh? Stupid pun. Anybody else got any more puns?
I didn't realize how much writing.
I'm out of poop puns.
You're out of poop puns?
Yeah, I'm pooped, quite frankly.
You're just quite pooped.
My God. Too many
do
poop.
You, John, do you have a new story or anything?
I do. Oh, I do, cool, actually. Quick. Yeah.
Nice.
I got this one from CBS. It's about a serial killer, actually. And it's from February of 2018, so some of you might have read this already. But if you hadn't, Rodney Alcala was convicted of killing five people in the 1970s and then was convicted in 2010 of two more murders.
Wow.
And they believe that he's committed many more. He's one of those sexual serial killers that really like to kind of toy with his victims. He's a gross, gross dude. But what they found when they were investigating his crimes was he had a storage locker in Seattle, and there was thousands of photographs in there.
I saw the tagline of that story. I didn't read it, though. But yeah. So he had all these... Oh, and they were able to, through these pictures, convict him more recently.
Of two more. So they're looking for...
Wow.
They're looking... There's 100 people in photographs. And these pictures are of you know... young kids, teenagers, boys, girls, some of them in sexual, almost pornographic
poses
and depictions. Yeah, this guy's horrendous.
Oh. So he didn't have a preference. He just, as long as they were little kids, didn't matter, boy, girl, whatever.
He would rape them and kill them. So what they found was there's about 100 photographs that the Huntington Beach, California detectives are actually looking at to try and figure out who are in these photographs.
Wait, did you just say Huntington Beach?
Yeah, Huntington Beach, California.
I used to live near there.
Yeah,
so there's 100 photographs, and underneath, what's interesting is, and if you guys look at the article, underneath each one of these is, do you recognize this person in the photo? Please contact Huntington Beach, California Police at 714-375-5066. So they're actively
still trying to figure out
looking for these people. And the pictures are haunting. Okay. If you guys look at these,
some of them are really, really
just haunting photographs of people from the 70s.
Yeah, man, that's the dark depravity of the human soul right there.
That is the definition of the dark depravity of the human soul. So this guy's a real piece of shit.
Thousands. So he had killed over 100 kids, or at least molested,
they've convicted him of 7 murders so far, and they don't know what the full count is. They don't know anything about these 100 people. Wow. And want any information.
Could be more.
Yeah, guys, so. if anybody out there is listening, you can go to this site off the link of the news story that John here has given us, which we'll be providing links for all of these stories on our Facebook and any of our platforms. So if you're interested, read the article, and then if you grew up or know anybody grew up in the area, have them take a look at some of the photos. That way we can try to hopefully get this guy convicted of some more murders so we can spend a lifetime in prison.
Right.
he's already got a death sentence. He did this in California. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they care about giving him another death sentence, but what they care about is figuring out, are these people okay? These people?
Yeah, and let the kids or parents of these people.
California too, yeah. Good.
All right, great news stories. Awesome guy, awesome job, guys. Very interesting stuff there. We've got some alien monuments. We got some more. Awesome. We got the removal of the shit.
We finally closed the door on the poop train.
Poop train!
We've got this serial killer with recent events. Hopefully we can get some more of these people and families some rest on these issues. It's creepypasta time.
Yay.
Creepypasta time. Creepypasta time.
Creepypasta.
All right, guys. This one is called Kids in the Dark.
Uh-oh.
Going back to kids. I guess it's probably the most compelling. Growing up poor in the Deep South meant sharing a lot with my little brother, Ollie. Most often, we'd pass toys, clothes, and skin conditions between us. up until he was 6, we even shared a bed. Neither of us was happy about that. It was my 10th birthday when that changed. I got one present that year, and it was a bed of my own. Ollie was jealous right away, and I could understand why. He had to keep the half-broken-down frame with the worn-out mattress. The one I'd gotten was much better, but not being broken and worn was enough. Sleeping apart was a great feeling. It was freedom. No longer would I have to suffer the sudden and inexplicable kicks to the stomach. No longer would I wake up with Ollie's foot pressed in my neck like he'd stepped on Dracula the night before. It's basically like sleeping with our 5-year-old. Yeah. And when he gets in the bed, it's like kicks, nudges, punches.
He needs 98% of the surface area of the bed,
yeah, so
as most children do.
240 degrees, where we're like, you know, straightforward. I think he gets that from his mother a little bit. So back to the story. At least that's what I thought. Right away, right after I got the new bed, the shrieks started. At first, I thought Ollie woke up in the middle of the night and screamed because he'd gotten scared. Then the sound echoed through the tiny room again, and I knew it wasn't a normal cry. The room was always black as pitch after sunset. The one window we had was pressed against a long leaf pine, and even the biggest, brightest moon cast no light inside. The shriek just about drove me crazy. Every night, probably at the same exact time, these sharp yelps would knock me right out of my dreams. It wasn't my mom or dad yelling either. I knew what that sounded like, believe me. Most worrying of all was the fact that I could never tell where it was coming from. It seemed completely random. One night it'd come from somewhere near the closet, the next it'd shoot over the corner of the ceiling. Any hope I had of having my own space would get dashed every time as Ollie would silently slip into the bed with me, shaking like crazy. He collapsed onto me and wouldn't let go until it was almost daybreak. Most times I'd take his hand and tell him everything was going to be okay and it'd be over by morning, but I was never really sure. Over time, the shriek started changing. At first, it was only by small degrees, but eventually it took on primal hooting sound of a primate calling out its fierce warning. I had to clasp pillows to my ears just to keep from going deaf. Mom and Dad never believed me or Ollie, basically because the thing, wherever it was, refused to make a peep when they were in the room. Apparently, they couldn't even hear it through the walls, even though it was damn sure loud enough. The shriek just got worse and worse until it felt like I couldn't take it anymore. me and Ollie were doing really bad in school. We just had no energy at all. I could sleep more deeply with my head propped up and eyes open in the middle of class than in my own room at night. Then, thankfully, we moved out of the house nearly a year later. I had contemplated all sorts of things, even a child's clumsy concept of suicide, to get away from the horrific night noise. There was no problem at the next house. It was nice. White cookie-cutter home on a dead-end street, and I welcomed the normality. What's more, when we moved in, there was a bunk bed waiting for me and Ollie. No more broken beds, no more second bed I ended up having to share anyway. The only problem was deciding who'd get the top bunk. I told Ollie I deserved it after all. I had gotten a new bed way back, and he ruined it by climbing in every night. What? He shook his head. I never did that.
Ooh.
Oh. I had always wondered why the noise stopped the second I was sharing my bed. Now I had the answer.
Interesting.
Oh, I just get... Oh.
That is creepy. Well done.
That's some well-done creepy pasta right there.
Wow. It
gave me the chills for shit sure. Ugh. Good Lord. All right, that's creepypasta time, everybody, or I like to call creepypasta corner.
Creepypasta corner. That was
all right. Thanks for joining creepy. Us on that, guys. All right, guys. Well, we're gonna get on to our darker side movie review. This week, we're reviewing Arrival. It's a 2016 drama mystery. I would put sci-fi on top of that.
A little bit.
Runs just about 2 hours. IMDb gives it a 7.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 94%. Rachel?
Keeping it fresh.
Yeah, it's wow. Super fresh.
Fresh.
Metacritic gave it an 81. 88% liked this movie from the Google users.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Linguistics professor Louise Banks, played by Amy Adams, leads an elite team of investigators when gigantic spaceships touch down in 12 locations around the world. As nations teeter on the verge of global war, Banks and her crew must race against time to find a way to communicate with the extraterrestrial visitors. Hoping to unravel the mystery, she takes a chance that could threaten her life and quite possibly all of mankind. All right, guys.
Dun,
dun, dun. Dun,
dun, dun. Dun, dun,
dun. Do I have to do it too?
Yes, please.
Dun, dun, dun.
I like that.
All right, so this movie starts off, we meet Amy Adams. And, you know, she's this linguistics person. All of a sudden, these gigantic, weird rock-looking spaceships come out of the sky. And
they almost look like almonds. Like big, shiny almonds.
Yeah, they're pretty much.
Standing vertical. Or then, hovering,
right.
I should say.
And then all of a sudden, she's being called off to go on this team. Because she's a linguistics expert. At some point, they're going to try to communicate. Or at least potentially communicate with these aliens, and she's carted off to this one area in the United States. It's the United States, right? She's in
Montana,
yeah,
I think.
I think so. And then she becomes part of this team. They try to figure out how to communicate with these creatures, what it's all about, what are they here for, and it goes from there. But the movie gets really deep into something
very humanistic.
Very humanistic. The narration and the directorial cuts, some of the scenes in this movie are really, really well done. I enjoyed this movie thoroughly.
The shooting was amazing.
Now, eventually we come to realize that she communicates with them, but she doesn't understand their language because their language is...
It's visual.
It's like visual language. Visual, yeah, type.
Kind of looks like a thing. Trash polka tattoo.
So basically what happens is...
Trash polka tattoo, yeah.
Is this team enters this weird tunnel thing that enters into the middle of the spaceship.
It's crazy.
And there's a glass wall in which these aliens who look like giant octopuses slap their tentacles right on the glass. And when doing so, it creates a pattern of almost ink.
It almost looks like ink,
but you can see that it's, you know, it's crescent-shaped, but there's little...
Intricacies,
and that's how they figure out the language is through watching them repeatedly
over and over again
use these symbols and similar symbols, and that's how she figures out their language.
Now, their language was it mathematical or were these representations were their language of So she had to go through all these things and figure out what each squiggle meant
right.
for their language and stuff like
because
that.
Because I think she even says it in the movie, one wrong guess could be disastrous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one wrong interpretation of one of those squiggles could mean the end of the world right. for everybody.
Right.
Who knows? I mean, at one point, something happens to her, doesn't it? Doesn't she get a vision?
She starts getting these strange visions of her and what appears to be a young girl, presumably her daughter. Throughout the movie, it flashes back and forth.
Right, which is confusing at first because we don't understand why.
Right, but then you find out through watching these, you know, flashbacks that her daughter was sick, presumably cancer, and had died.
But she's not even had a daughter at this point.
You ruined it. You gave it away.
Spoiler alert.
No, spoiler.
Hey, it's a 2016 movie, guys. Yeah. You should have seen it already. Forrest, you saw it the most recently, didn't you?
Yes, I actually watched it today.
So, I mean...
I loved it.
There was in this whole thing, while they're trying to communicate with these people and try to figure out these creatures, these aliens, these extraterrestrials, the world is basically... at its breaking point.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have China, you have Russia, you have the European Union, you have Africa, you have all these places across the world. You know, you got China who just wants to just jump right away and start bombing and nuking these things.
I think that's kind of ironic, too, with the factual things they were trying to portray in this, you know, fiction film, especially pertaining to who might want to act with attacking first. Because I just think it's ironic, because, I mean, I would see maybe Russia or America attacking first.
Yeah, I mean, the people with the nukes and who, you know, if they can't communicate with these extraterrestrials at some point, then we need them gone, because we don't want to have these, we don't know what they're capable of.
I was anxious. I didn't want them to attack them.
And who didn't? So, I mean, right before we get to the breaking point, literally planes are flying towards these spaceships, and they're about to drop nuclear bombs for the first time. Because they did, I think, send a couple bombs towards some of the ships early on just to test it to see what happened. But they hadn't used nuclear bombs at the point.
Oh.
And I think we're at the verge of a nuclear bombing of these ships. She figures out how to communicate with them.
Right.
Yeah.
And they interpret what they're being told, and what they're being told is what we want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, we find out that these creatures aren't here to kill us. You know, they're giving us a gift. I won't tell you what this gift is, people. I don't want to ruin everything about the movie for you, so you can watch it. But I really, 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 really thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I every time I watch it, and I've watched it a couple times now since 2016, it has made me cry.
Aww.
It has made me cry. As a parent... Can't.
Oh, my God.
As a parent, you know, it's one of those things that you're like, oh, my God. Oh, my heart.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, and then you learn the secret that it's heartbreaking.
Well, you already told the secret, so you might as well just talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, you learn, you know, she learns that she's going to have a daughter through...
These flashbacks aren't really flashbacks. What they are is they're premonitions into her future.
Yeah, they're...
So this daughter that she knows is going to die hasn't even been conceived yet.
Yeah, and then she realizes that it's her kids are, you know, her kid is going to die. She's going to at some time in the future give birth to a child, knowing full well that she's going to have a relationship that gets her pregnant, yet she still goes through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would you guys do that as parents? Would you do that?
I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those conundrums, one of those questions where you're like, if I had... a vision of when and if my child was to die, would I want that child to be born? And I guess I would want any time at all available with that child to get to know that child as best and as long as I possibly could.
But at the same time, like, her daughter was sick.
Yeah.
She was sick. You have to assume that it's cancer just by, you know, the visual
her hair
clues. Yeah, the loss of hair and everything like that. So would you want to put your child through that again? Not that it's the same child, but would you want to watch your child suffer at the same time?
Well, knowing that it does before the child is born, no, I don't think I would want to, but I would also, you're given a gift. You know?
Yeah.
I mean...
The gift of love.
The gift of love. And I mean... I guess I would. I mean, I would want to know that child, I guess.
I'm not...
Because you don't know the child until you know the child. And
make the time precious, too. Yeah. Right. You know? It would really be worth... so much more.
That's a tough one.
I mean, tough.
And you have to think about this. This kind of literally happens all the time, where kids are born with these certain diseases or certain malfunctions in their bodies and brains and makeups, and their parents learn very quickly that their child isn't going to have much time after. I mean, you can even have tests done knowing some of these conditions, and some people do have these kids knowing that they have these conditions, and again, they accept it as a gift, and it was a gift. And then they live with that, and they live with that child as long as they possibly can. And, you know, it happens on a daily basis. This is a part of our lives. It's a part of the darker side of what we have to go through as humans sometimes to make these hard decisions. But again, it's crazy. But I really enjoyed this movie. It really, really was much more than just your basic sci-fi film, your basic thriller.
Definitely.
It was definitely deep. Touching, emotional. It touched on the humanity, and all aspects of humanity, the darkness where, you know, they wanted to start a global war with these creatures, you know, to all the way to the lighter side of love, and then even the darker side of that love, being so short-lived, and you know
how precious and fleeting and it really
absolutely
is.
Fleeting. I mean, we're only on this planet once, at least that's what I believe. So. I would give this probably right around Rotten Tomatoes, around a 94, 95 out of 4 quadrillion null narps.
Yeah, I would say a solid 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, good. For sure. Good for us. Awesome, man.
Yeah, I have to say, the one thing that I loved about the movie was the way she actually learned to communicate with them by teaching them how to speak or teaching them what our associations were with.
Yeah.
You know, like here's a human, and she's saying human and stuff like that, and they throw the image on the glass, and it's kind of cool. That's really how you teach anything to communicate.
You teach
a child to communicate. Dog. You hold up an apple, say this is an apple, and whatnot. So that was really I know they were aliens, but it was a real part of the human experience that they brought into the movie. Though it was a sci-fi, it had so much humanity to it.
It's kind of ironic that, you know, I never thought of it or saw it that way, John, but it's kind of ironic that she was able to teach these people how to speak English and how to speak human, basically.
Yeah.
But she was never able to give her child that experience. But they gave her the vision of her child, you know, gave her the choice. They were the one who gave her the ability to see the future.
Right.
So, but that's kind of weird and interesting that she was able to basically raise them as humans, but never not her child. But, you know,
I get what you mean.
I see what you're saying.
So what would you rate it at, John, on a scale of whatever you want?
Oh, yeah, it's in the 90s. I mean, I love sci-fi anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this one was so heartfelt and brought so much humanity that I really think you wouldn't have to be somebody who... watches an alien movie. It's not like Independence Day, right? Where the thing lands and we got to blow the thing up and there's a lot of funny quips.
Yeah.
Like, this was a real slice of the human experience. And that was that brought something more to that movie than I really expected watching the previews.
I agree. Right.
If you were to actually look up the real definition of science fiction, that would meet all of the criteria of the definition of science fiction.
Hell yeah.
You know? Sci-fi, we think of it as alien movies and everything else, but it's much more deeper. It's all about the human aspect of, you know, science and fiction. But you definitely look up the definition of it, and you guys can figure it out for yourselves. All right, well, that was the...
4 words.
Oh, yeah, 4 words.
I got a good one.
All right, what do you got?
Trust in your fate.
Trust in your fate. That's a good one. Forrest?
Be part of the arrival?
Yeah, might as well. Be part of it. Or, because if you don't, then... you know, all hell's going to break loose.
Right.
Johnny?
Yeah, I'd say not one to miss. Really, just go out and see this movie. Rent it. Watch it. Yeah. It's on Netflix.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Hulu.
It's on all the stuff.
It's on a bunch of them.
You can go out and find it, or you can steal it if you're one of those. But I highly recommend it. Great movie.
Heck yeah. What about you, Dave? 4 words?
It made me cry.
Aww. It sure did.
Tears running down my face like a baby. All right, again, that's our movie review today, guys. Again, go check out Arrival. You can find it on you know, any of the streaming services. You could probably buy it on Apple, etc., all those other places, Amazon. You know, great movie. If you don't, if you haven't seen it, please go out and check it out. All right. So this, everybody, is diving deeper into the darker side, the Rendlesham Forest Incident, Part 2.
Part 2.
Brought to us, our first Part 2, and it's going to be, it's brought to you today by Kellogg Cereal. No, I'm just kidding. by New Belgium Fat Tire Beer.
Love it.
Nice.
No, I'm just kidding. This, John and Rachel both are going to be tag teaming you guys, and not in the special way. They're going to be tag teaming you in the giving you some diving deeper into the dark side.
But I mean, we can always broker a deal. Just hit us up on any of the social media.
Or the Silk Road version 2.2.
I think we're at 3.0. I don't 3.0. Remember.
Yeah, you can broker a you know a deal there.
All right, guys. So last week we talked about the first night of the Rendlesham Forest incident. All right, everybody. So we're going to dive deep into the segment we talked about last week, the Rendlesham Forest. What we discussed last week was really just the beginning of a three-night adventure that took place in Suffolk, England. The RAF Bentwaters and RAF Woodbridge. I can't talk today, I'm sorry.
Air Force Bases.
Air Force Bases, thank you.
There you go.
So this I'm about to read is the memo that was sent on January 13th of 1981. So this was a couple weeks after the incident with the headline that says Unexplained Lights. There are three short paragraphs. The first one kind of reiterates what we talked about last week. So that way, for those of you who haven't listened to last week's episode, you can kind of get a gist of what we're talking about. So early in the morning of the 27th of December 1980 at approximately 0300, two USAF security police patrolmen saw unusual lights outside the back gate at RAF Woodbridge. Thinking an aircraft might have crashed or have been forced down, they called for permission to go outside the gate to investigate. The on-duty flight chief responded and allowed three patrolmen to proceed on foot. The individuals reported seeing a strange glowing object in the forest. The object was described as being metallic in appearance and triangular in shape, approximately 2 to 3 meters across the base and approximately 2 meters high. It illuminated the entire forest with a white light. The object itself had a pulsing red light on top and a bank of blue lights underneath. The object was hovering on legs as the patrolman approached the object. It maneuvered through the trees and disappeared. At this time, the animals on a nearby farm went into a frenzy. The object was briefly sighted approximately an hour later near the back gate. The next day, three depressions, 1.5 feet deep and inches, 1.5 inches deep and 7 inches in diameter, were found where the object had been sighted on the ground. The following night, the 29th of December 1980, the area was checked for radiation. Beta gamma readings of 0.1 millicentigens. I think that's how you say it. I'm not entirely sure. It's really weird.
Yeah, it's a Geiger counter. So basically what he said was that it was more than just background radiation.
Was recorded with peak readings in the three depressions and near the center of the triangle formed by the depressions. A nearby tree had moderate 0.05 to 0.07 readings on the side of the tree toward the depressions. So it not only is on the ground, but it's also surrounding the trees around where this supposed craft had landed. All right, so later in the night, a red sun-like light was seen through the trees. It moved about and pulsed. At one point, it appeared to throw off glowing particles and then broke into five separate white objects and then disappeared. Immediately thereafter, three star-like objects were noticed in the sky, two objects to the north and one to the south, all of which were about 10 degrees off the horizon. The objects moved rapidly in sharp angular movements and displayed red, green, and blue lights. The object to the north appeared to be elliptical through an 8 to 12 power lens. They then turned to full circles. The objects to the north remained in the sky for an hour or more. The object to the south was visible for 2 or 3 hours and beamed down a stream of light from time to time. Numerous individuals, including the undersigned, witnessed the activities in paragraphs 2 and 3. Signed, Charles I. Holt, Lieutenant Colonel, USAF, Deputy Base Commander.
So this is a memo he had made to basically give their official story of what happened?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so what had happened was Holt was there when they took all the readings, and he did this brilliant recording, which we'll link to. He recorded what was going on, just verbally, and you could hear the anxiety in people's voices.
It was just like an old cassette tape recorder, right?
Yeah, just this old cassette tape, and you can hear like anxiety as they're taking the Geiger counter readings, and they're looking through they call them star scopes, but really we call it night vision now. And they were getting readings of heat off of the tree where the trees were damaged, and where the craft was supposed to have landed. They were getting readings of heat. One of the things that came out years later, and this is in an interview that Holt gave with a guy by the name of Howard Hughes.
Not the
Spruce Goose guy. Yeah. But years later, Holt actually got in touch with the air traffic controllers, just basically saying, why did you not say that you saw anything or you know, whatever? And basically, they were so worried about their careers that they were silent about what they saw. But what they did see was they clocked one of these things going 5,000 miles an hour in the radar.
Wow.
5,000 miles an hour.
I mean, there are a lot of, like, radar blips that people see, you know, like, planes will, you know, they'll contact air traffic control, hey, did you guys see something on there? They'll be like, yeah, but what we saw wasn't going, it was going far too fast for it to be anything that you could have, you know, but they're like, no, hey, I just saw a flash of light go by me. Yeah, well, that was going 5,000 miles an hour, you know, because it just pops up real quick on a blip, and, you know, it could have been an abnormality in their eyes, but something going that fast is going to move real fast across that radar screen.
Oh, yeah. The other thing that was cool was Holt wrote this memo that Rachel just read, because he made the higher-ups aware, so he was a deputy base commander, he made the base commander aware, who then became a two-star general. He made them aware that we saw all these things, took all these readings, we saw light, we saw beams coming down, they thought it was lasers. And the higher-ups just ignored the whole thing, and Holt was actually told to write a memo and submit it to the British government, because this didn't happen on the American Air Force Base, it's a British problem. And what did they do? Everybody just ignored it for years and years and years.
Well, and then the British were like, well, it's an American problem because it was your Air Force.
Correct.
Yeah,
but didn't it technically happen in the Rendlesham Forest?
Yeah. So
the experience, and isn't that not property of the United Kingdom?
That is the UK's land, yeah.
Yeah, it's owned by a forestry commission.
And so you've got both of these sides, the US government going, this happened in British airspace, has happened in British land, this is a British problem, and then you got the British going, now you guys are the one who saw it,
mm-hmm.
You're the one who investigated it, it's an American problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So no wonder nothing got done about it.
Exactly.
Bureaucracy and politics.
I'm not going to lie.
Drink.
Oh God, not going to lie. Everybody drink.
Refreshing.
What are you not going to lie about, Forrest?
I think part of that with the whole America stance about this is UK's land. I'm not saying America is wrong for making that decision with what they decide to do. But I think part of that is comes with what America, or how America kind of is when it comes to these kind of mental things. You know, they see something like this and say, you know what, don't worry about it. We don't care. You know, if you see these kind of things and you go around telling people about these things, they're going to think you're just crazy anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and most governments do. I mean, there are a couple countries out there that are really open about these types of things. But America is always closed door about this type of thing.
Yeah. Canada has a commission looking at...
Canada rocks. No. But yeah, I mean, definitely their stance at this point was, hush, hush, we're not going to talk about it. Nobody does. So, and if you do, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like we talk about every time we talk about these types of things. You know? People, like John just brought up, they were... The air traffic control people didn't want to say anything because they were worried about their careers. So
very much.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. But yeah, Forrest, you definitely had a good point there.
So one of the other things that's interesting is as time went on, obviously the story's coming out and people start talking about it. And I mentioned a guy by the name of Larry Warner. Charles Holt actually said that Larry Warner wasn't there. Warren, I think it was. And when he was asked by Howard Hughes, he was asked, you know, why would these things happen? And he said, there's a very large group of people that are very skilled in disinformation. And then he went on to say, what better way to discredit a story than to make it so ridiculous and entertaining that people think it's crazy and ignore it?
Mm-hmm.
He then said that there is an agency beyond the government in the background pulling the strings. All the three-digit agencies, CIA, FBI, those types, MI6.
DOJ.
Yeah, correct. All the three-digit agencies are only reporting and don't have enough authority to do anything.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So there's a puppet master pulling the strings on this one.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Of course.
No, who was this guy that wasn't there?
Larry Warren.
Yeah, he wrote a book called... Left at the East Gate.
Oh, that was written by and the co-author too, right?
Yeah. It was two people.
So the guy who was actually there, who did these recordings at the scene, who took the scientific data, the guy who basically experienced this and the one who was firsthand was there, is telling us that this other gentleman who says that he was there was never there.
Yeah, and that gentleman's not alone. There's many people that are.
Oh, so he basically, what's this guy's name again?
Colonel Holt.
Holt.
Charles Holt.
So yeah. Holt was the one who said that quote about the government, right?
Correct.
That there are puppeteers pulling puppet strings.
Hmm.
So what he's saying is that this other gentleman is one of those puppet.
One of those puppets that's making it ridiculous and entertaining. Yeah, and the thing that he said at the conclusion of his interview was, he said, quote, "We are not alone."
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so what happened after that whole experience? What happened the second day and then the third day? Were there other things that had happened, or was it just this going into the investigation type of thing?
It's more so going into the investigation. And then, of course, there's, you know, the lights that they were seeing was supposedly a lighthouse. Off in the distance, you know, because lighthouses move around all the time.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Stuff like that. You know, the impressions that were made by this supposed craft were actually, you know, rabbits digging, even though they were in a perfect formation. I didn't know rabbits could do that.
They're amazing.
Well, have you ever seen Watership Down?
Wow.
I mean, they're quite intelligent. And then you got the whole Rockwall series or Redwall.
Oh, Redwall, yeah.
Yeah, with the mouses.
Mossburn or whatever.
Yeah, if you read those stories, mice and rabbits and such are quite capable of stuff like that.
They weren't quick to investigate, but they were quick to cover it up, that's for sure.
Yeah, so since then, they've actually, there's been many sightings in that spot, and Holt said, and this is the last piece I have, Holt said that there's these beings, aliens, whatever you want to call it, are attracted to that spot. He's like, I don't know if it's a portal or if it's the magnetism or whatever, but there have been many sightings in that Rendlesham Forest area, in that part of England, since mm-hmm. then.
Wow.
Now, what is at this actual Air Force base? Was it just a strategical...
It's a NATO site, so it's...
So it was just a strategical place for... This wasn't a nuclear site, was it?
I believe it was, yeah.
That's the reason why we're seeing all these things.
It was during the Cold War. All this happened, right at the height of 1980, so I mean...
Yeah, Poland was overthrowing their communist regime. Russia was losing footing. I mean,
we're at the height
10
of nuclear,
years before they tore down the wall in Berlin.
Right.
Because if you do look through the history of a lot of these sites at different Air Force bases, different military installations, you're going to see that these sites are nuclear installations.
Oh, yeah.
Across the world. I'm talking American, I'm talking Russian, Chinese. All of these countries that have developed nuclear devices are being visited by these extraterrestrials throughout the history of man, and you would basically say, yeah, no shit, that people are still seeing, you know, and have continued to see aliens and such in that general area, just like they do in Arizona, Utah, you know, and all those places where we still have nuclear, you know, bombs.
Yeah, lighthouses in Arizona moving around.
Yeah.
I go to Maine all the time, and I see some lighthouses, and I go to another town, it's like, oh, that's the same lighthouse. Must have moved.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So now it's a park. Rendlesham?
The UFO trail.
The UFO trail.
Really?
Trail.
No way.
I forgot about that. Yeah, they made the, you can
I want to go there.
Pay to walk there. Or,
yeah,
or
this is the walking path, and where the spot was supposed to be, there's a model of the
craft.
Of the craft that was supposed to have landed there.
What they considered it look like and everything?
Yeah.
That's cool. You guys have any more information for us in this regard? So, I mean, where can people find, some links and stuff? You could Google all these guys.
There is a wonderful website. I believe it's titled RendlesshamForest.com. That has a lot of
easy to find
insight in, documents, everything you pretty much need.
And you can go to YouTube, right?
Oh, yeah. YouTube has a ton of interviews.
Lots of hours of information and material.
So many hours, it's ridiculous. You can also listen to the actual audio recorded from Halt that night.
Yeah, we'll link to that.
We'll definitely link to that. That would be good.
Okay, so here's a clip now of the audio that was recorded on the night of Halt's investigation.
It is looking directly overhead. One can see an opening in the trees plus some freshly broken pine branches on the ground underneath. Looks like someone came off about 15 to 20 feet up. Some small branches about an inch or less in diameter. 0148, we're hearing very strange sounds out of the farmer's barnyard animals. It's very, very active, making an awful lot of noise.
You're having a pigmentation.
You just saw a light where?
Wait, slow down.
Where?
Right in this position here, straight ahead in between the tree. There it is again. Watch straight ahead off my flashlight there, sir. So there it is.
Hey, I see it too. What is it?
We don't know, sir.
So can I get some of it? Yeah, it's a strange, small red light. Looks to be out maybe a quarter to half mile, maybe further out.
At 244, we're at the far side of the second farmer's field, and made sighting again about 110 degrees. This looks like it's clear out to the coast. It's right on the horizon. Moves about a bit and flashes from time to time. Still steady or red in color. Also, after negative readings in the center of the field, we're picking up the slight readings, 4 or 5 clicks now on the meter. 305, we see strange strobe-like flashes to the rather sporadic, but there's definitely something, some kind of phenomena. 305, at about 10 degrees horizon directly north, we've got two strange objects, half-moon shape, dancing about with colored lights on them. Guess to be about 5 to 10 miles out, maybe less. The half moons have now turned into full circles. As though there was an eclipse or something there for a minute or two. 0315, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south, 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in the north are moving, one's moving away from us.
It's moving out fast.
This one on the right, take
it
away.
The object to the south is still beaming down lights to the ground. 0400 hours, one object still hovering over Woodbridge Base at about 5 to 10 degrees off the horizon, still moving erratic and similar lights and beaming down as earlier.
All right, guys, well, that was Diving Deeper into the Darker Side. That was the continuation and conclusion of the Rendlesham Forest incident. Thank you guys for bringing all that knowledge to us. We appreciate it wholeheartedly for doing all the research and doing all the hard work.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
I loved it.
It's quite an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys want to dive even further deeper, please, again, just look up all those information.
It's insane how deep and how extended this goes, but it's not enough for a one-hour podcast.
Exactly.
Aliens, a world cabal, keeping all the information down. Fantastic.
I mean, we can do a conspiracy theory episode about who actually runs the world at some point in the future, guys, for sure.
Heck yeah,
it's me.
Oh, John, if it was you, we'd be so much more rich.
If I ruled the world, I would free all my sons. Imagine that.
Oh my God, you guys.
Oh God. Oh, who did that song? Was that
Nas, I think?
It was Nas, yes. Thank you for bringing some Nas into my day.
Yeah, with all apologies to Nas. You're the man. You're the man, Nas.
Doesn't come often enough, for sure. All right, guys. We're going to get into our next segment, a segment we like to call Getting Lost in the Forest. This is a segment where Forest basically gives us a topic or something, a rant basically, about something that was really just upsetting him, making him mad currently in politics or in the world, etc. Forrest, over to you, bro.
Okay, this is a news story from AP News Source. I had a follow-up story as well from NoStraightNews.com. North Carolina woman from Rutherfordton, North Carolina, admitted in court on Friday that she led approximately 30 parishioners from her church to attack, kidnap, and beat a gay member of the church in an effort to expel his demons.
So basically try to make him straight, because what? Homosexuality to them is a demonic
position. She tried to beat the gay out of
She him. Tried to beat the... You can't beat the gay out of people. Right? I've never tried, but it doesn't sound like a...
Hey, Forrest, you want to play a game?
It's called beat the gay out of you, bro.
I'm not going to lie. It sounds like a crazy-ass fucking game.
Oh, not going to lie. So every time Forrest says that, everybody's got to take a drink.
Yep. Especially if you're driving a car.
All right, continue, Forrest. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's fine. Anderson said she believed Fenner was unclean and sinful after the minister of the church, Brooke Covington, launched into a reported 2-hour-long verbal assault on the man. This poor fellow, who was also kidnapped, church members blocked him from leaving the church, holding him against his will as he was berated, slapped, and choked by fellow parishioners at the Spindale Church.
Ooh, they're doing Jesus's work, man.
Yeah, they are. Oh, wait, so what... Where in the Bible does it say that that's actually wrong? Is there a chapter?
Well, I think they talk a lot about, like, you know, doing unto others as you'd want to be done to you. So I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't want anything beating the hell out of me. Keep your fucking hands off me. You don't touch me at all.
I can't imagine what
this
guy went
through.
Let me be
who I am. Yeah, man. So what's chafing your balls here, buddy? What's making...
You have to ask that question. Why does this bother you, Forrest?
What really grinds my gears today, you know, it's 2018. We are still seeing legislators writing laws, creating legislation that allows for religious freedoms that oppresses the minorities of this country. This kind of message from our government and legislators perpetuate the bully culture and specifically the bullying and oppression of the LGBTQ community, and its exclusive and discriminatory intentions are affecting the lives of young and adult LGBT Americans on a daily basis. The problem is, every state has different laws about bullying and sexual discrimination. Those states that allow for this type of religious-based discrimination make it difficult for the people of the state to have a say or vote on traditional legislation abolishment. Legislation for protections, that's a big fucking problem to me. It should be a problem to a lot of people, actually, not just me. If these laws, non-protections, and exclusions are still present or not put in legislation for the protection of these American minorities who are hard workers and pay taxes in, just like all those who are protected under the law, how can these minority groups not feel like second-class citizens? And what kind of message is that sending to our younger generations? Mm. How is this setting an example for younger Americans, you know, younger adults?
It's gonna push them back into the closet. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. It's like with that, you know, nowadays it's a lot easier to come out as it was many years ago.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah, very.
And in some places, it was considered illegal. So yep. I mean,
still is technically.
Yeah, some states.
So a little bit further into this, Texas used to deem LGBT as hybrid prototypes in their state's constitution. This I know because I used to study the state constitutions of this nation. I wanted to know where I was and wasn't protected.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's smart. It's very smart.
You know, I want to know where I would want to live. I pay my freaking taxes. You know, I work hard. You know, if I have to go somewhere for a job transfer or something, I want to know what states are more harmful or more progressive or welcoming.
Well, it's a safety issue for you.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is. It really...
Are you going to move to a state where they're going to beat the crap out of you?
Yep.
Yeah. Or allow somebody to and not prosecute them as a hate crime. Yeah, exactly.
It's sad. I had a bisexual friend throughout college. I didn't really know her from college. I knew her from somewhere else. She moved down to her hometown, back down to her hometown with her parents in Texas. And she, once again, she's extremely unhappy with everything there. You know, many people still can't get married in certain counties in the South. You can still be bullied for your sexuality in many states where discriminatory religious legislation allows for bullying. Being fired from your job, evicted from your apartment, even assaulted to a degree, all because of how you love and who you choose to have private consensual sex with. Also, a lot of places still allow hate crimes against the LGBTQ+ communities to not be recognized as hate crimes. You can be denied a job, even denied a marriage transfer between states. A friend of mine was denied a gun permit and was denied treatment by a doctor. This list could go on forever.
When are we going to hold our government responsible for their unconstitutional acts against the American people? Many states in the South don't follow federal laws against discrimination, while they still receive maximum federal funding that they can get from the federal government. Mm-hmm. There's no inclusions for protections against bullying and sexual discrimination, and this has affected me to this day. More and more stories keep coming out about hate crimes while our government is still obsessing over the rights of LGBT plus Americans, yet they don't write protections to all and don't prosecute those that do discriminate whatsoever, in most cases. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump and the GOP seem to clearly enable extremist groups in America, such as alt-right, KKK, neo-Nazis, nationalists, etc. Keeps growing, it seems like. Because of similar views held, I chose to cut off family for my own well-being over the years. Most recently, I cut off a family member as well, due to a certain incident that I encountered. Nothing crazy, just talking and stuff. I was bullied to the point I wanted to kill myself when I was 14, 15. The message I got from all public schools I went to was, "Sorry, nothing we can do because the state has nothing for protections. Sorry, just because a policy isn't backed by the state, but bullying in the name of religious belief is, does not make it right for someone to bully, verbally harass, threaten, assault, or stalk, all because someone can't think logically, their narrow-minded thought process. You know, I was blamed for my forced exit out of the closet by my school administrators. You know, just exit through the gift shop, why don't you?"
Jesus. Yeah, basically.
And ever since the Orlando nightclub shootings and hate crimes in the LGBT community are rising in a lot of cities, how do you expect we should feel right now, you know, living in Trump land, you know? From my own experience, a lot of people I know don't even want to go anywhere because of how paranoid they are of being, you know, maltreated by the hand and words of these simple-minded and religiously biased groups.
Yeah.
To this day, I don't know if I will ever forget those days of, my bullying past. If I do in the future, that'll be a gift. I've developed anxiety and depression due to this abuse and discrimination that affects me on a daily basis and millions of other Americans. Some say high school was the best time of their lives. Well, school in general for me up until senior year was hell for me. I can't even hear the word fag anymore without subconsciously thinking about the past, and then my head, you know, just kicks in. I would love to quickly give a shout out to everyone who has stuck with me through the progress of this segment. It means the world to me. My message to anyone facing any kind of situation of bullying in any year of their life, seek help. There are people out there that care. As I know, when you think it can't get any darker, you are completely mistaken. It most certainly can, and please seek help. You can get through it.
So yeah, I mean, Jesus, Forrest, really totally against any type of legislation that allows for any type of religious discrimination.
As I'm sure a lot of people are, I think.
Well,
I hope.
A good majority of us are people who don't really want religion in our laws or in our schools or anything like that. Keep your religion out of my life. If your religion, it's not my religion. And if it is my religion, you know, I still wouldn't hold anybody, you know.
That was like the biggest thing in middle school when I was getting bullied. All the bullies, I don't know if the parents told them what to say or if they just thought of it.
Kids are cruel, and a lot of them do learn from their parents.
Yeah, they hear it around the dinner table.
They play the religion card once they get in trouble, and it was just like, really?
Yeah, your religion shouldn't be able to protect you against any type of cruel behavior to any human being whatsoever.
So, like, if I wanted to go into Walmart and see a bunch of shit, I could say that Jesus told me to?
Yeah, well, I mean, you probably
would. You can. It's not going to work, but you can.
You could, okay. Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, more likely, you could go into a Walmart and hit someone and bully them.
Because of my religious beliefs.
Because of your religious beliefs.
All right.
And be protected by it. This type of legislation, a lot of it's mostly in the religious breadbasket of America. This podcast isn't heavily religious. We have our own views and thoughts and opinions on religion and our own faiths.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Yeah, hail Satan.
Right.
Hail yourself, more like it.
The Flying Spaghetti Monster teaches us all that we should be kind to one another.
The Flying Spaghetti Monster, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that.
All right, Forrest, again, thank you so much for diving us, getting us lost in your forest.
Thank you.
You know, it brings up the weird things that humanity, how it really affects us all, and you know, I mean, whether you are LGBTQ or if you're, you know, what do they call us?
An ally?
Yeah.
Almost every, majority, I'd say a lot of people in America are allies.
I would just call us, you know, humans.
People.
The other humans.
Right?
You
exactly.
Know, regardless
we're all
of any of the bullshit, we all have bullshit.
We're all skeletons.
Know? Yeah, it's ridiculous. Well, guys, that is the Darker Side podcast for today. I am David Pottle. You can find me on Facebook. You can find my band Frenemy at Frenemy Providence. You can find my other podcast, Life, Relationships, and Everything in Between with Kevin Spurl. Most importantly, please, people, we need you to rate and like our podcast.
Please rate.
Put a review, please, on all whatever platform you go to. Please, it gets people curious about us. The bigger our rating is, the better, the more we have reviews. People read them and want to listen into our podcast. So please help out in that respect. Rachel, your deets.
All right, guys. I am Rachel Pottle. You can find me on Facebook, Rachel Gordon Pottle. I spell my name the right way, R-A-C-H-E-L. I'm also on Snapchat. I don't know how to work any of the other social media platforms because I'm old. but yeah, you can certainly hit me up there or on Snapchat, DRP49532. Send me some pics.
Forrest, nice. Real quick, your deets.
Forrest Smith. I have, you know, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that great stuff. You know, I got Forrest Films on Facebook, YouTube, all that crazy stuff. Don't forget to please check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you know, Podbean, Android Music, iTunes podcasts, iTunes in general, I guess. You know, all these awesome apps. And please rate us and let us know what you think. And feel free to message us, too, if you have any.
Yeah, start a conversation.
Yeah, creepypasta or anything.
Yeah, if you throw us some reviews, maybe we'll read them on air.
Hell yeah.
Good or bad.
I like that.
And if you're curious about us, we're curious about you.
Yes, very curious.
Johnny, your deets, where can people find you, bro?
Yeah, sure. I'm Herman Brau. That's HERRMANNBRAU, like the German word for beer, at Instagram. Hit me up there. Send me pictures of your motorcycles. Please take a picture of the bike in front of stuff and hashtag it accordingly. Also, pictures of your kittens, your children, your food. I love it all. Just send it all my way. We can start a silly conversation on Instagram. Other than that, please find this podcast. That is the Darker Side podcast at Instagram and love it like crazy. 'Cause Instagram is literally the best platform.
Oh, I love Instagram.
Guys, if you are coming across any types of issues, any types of bullying, any types of social injustices, please seek help.
Please.
You know, we do talk about a lot of the darker things that happen in this. We don't want you guys to be one of our news stories.
No.
We don't want you to be one of the weird, fucked up experiences that we do talk about. Please seek help.
Forrest threw a bunch of numbers.
Yep.
And Forrest, I think you can continue to link that.
Yeah, I will link
just
that.
Check our page out. We've got tons of links for these types of things.
Oh, yeah.
Forrest does a good job advocating for this. Thank you, Forrest. And,
thank you.
And for the love of the flying spaghetti monster, you cannot beat the gay out of people. It doesn't work, and it just makes you a total asshole.
The worst fucking human being.
Seriously. Total asshole. You suck.
Yeah.
Don't beat the gay out of people.
Am I the only one that felt creeped out by the aliens?
Oh, from the rent?
From what they looked like. I mean, I thought they were fucking creepy.
From Arrival?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
They're giant octopuses.
Sorry,
the
guys.
Giant spaghetti monster.
The fucking spaghetti monster. That's where it comes from.
Okay, that's where you're
If she wore a colander on her head... The movie would have been over in 5 minutes. It would have been like, I'm saying bro, and just taking off.
Good cold outro for the show. All right, guys. Thank you for diving. You know, thank you for coming to the darker side with us.
The darker side.
The darker side. Darker side.
Podcast.
The darker side.
Doom, bow, bow.